Welcome back to The Serial Entrepreneur. I'm your host, Anna Wood. On today's episode, I'm joined by Gareth Wood, the co-founder and chairman of Kids Operating Room. We discuss innovating a new approach to charity surgical work in middle and low-income countries that empowers local teams, selling his company to start Kids OR, and winning the Founder of the Year Award at the Hustle Awards 2025. Let's dig in.
Hi, Gareth. Welcome to the podcast today. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. Yeah, good. Great to be here.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. So we begin every podcast episode with the same icebreaker question, which is, what's your favorite breakfast cereal and why?
Yeah, I was trying to think of a good answer, and I suspect I don't have a great one because I'm not a big breakfast person, but I do love breakfast and holiday, because that's when one of the few occasions having teenagers and young kids is getting breakfast all together. So when we're on mm-hmm. holiday, breakfast all together would be my favorite breakfast. Don't really have a cereal favorite, but that's my answer.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I love kind of like eating as a group of people. It's always so nice to kind of come together.
Yeah, absolutely. When I'm with the kids and Nicola at the same time around the table, that's my favorite breakfast.
Yeah, perfect. So would you be able to introduce yourself and tell me a bit about your background and your journey?
Yeah, my name's Gareth Wood. I am chairman of Kids Operating Room and also the co-founder of Kids Operating Room with my wife, Nicola. We've been doing that since 2018. Really before that, I was very much a kind of entrepreneurial background from the age of 20, 21 years old. Went on to run a successful bar and restaurant group in Scotland. And well, really part of that journey was really the conclusion of that was selling that business to fund Kids Operating Room. Mm-hmm. The initial investments were made in Kids Operating Room. So.
Yeah, great. So talk about Kids Operating Room. What is it and what is your mission?
Yeah, Kids Operating Room is a charity that was established in 2018. We look at building surgical infrastructure in countries where, for pediatric surgery, in countries where there really is just no capacity for surgery on children. You look at Uganda, which was the very first country in the world that we built the first operating room. Uganda had 21 million children. So to give some context to that, Scotland, where I live, has around 3.5 million children and 28 pediatric surgeons. John Sekibira was the only pediatric surgeon in the whole of Uganda for 21 million children. He didn't have a dedicated space for pediatric surgery. He didn't have the right tools. So everything that we take for granted in the UK and across Europe and really across high-income countries just wasn't the case. And, you know, there was a surgeon in Uganda, very talented, brilliant at his job, but just didn't have the tools, the space, and the capacity to operate on children. So huge waiting lists. You know, as a result of that, children dying unnecessarily from a surgically treatable condition, children going on to live their whole lives with disability or in pain because they couldn't access surgery when they need it. So just really heartbreaking. And when Nicola and I learned about what John was experiencing as a surgeon, having, you know, our own children and the path of having a family had made it that we had become quite reliant on the health service here in the UK to mm-hmm. children. We had lost some children. We had a child that went on to survive having required surgery. So I guess we kind of took that for granted. Even with positive and negative outcomes in our journey, we always had hope that, you know, our children would survive or they would go on and thrive. And what we couldn't get our heads around was that just all across low middle income countries, millions of children are dying from surgically treatable conditions simply because they can't access surgery when they need it. I think we talk a lot in global health about malaria, TB, HIV over the last 20, 25 years, but 5 times more children die from a condition globally than from HIV, TB, and malaria combined. So what we saw is that basic human right that a family, that parents, that communities experience here, where when a child is sick, they get care. We just became very aware through the work we did with John Sekibira in Uganda that that just wasn't the case. And what was interesting at the time, that was back in 2014, 4 years before we started Kids OR, this was meant to be a complete one-off. Nicola and I mm-hmm. saw this as a small investment from a philanthropic point of view. We were going to support John. And what ended up happening was John's trainee, who had been waiting years to qualify, Nassar, years to qualify but couldn't access enough surgical time to qualify, suddenly Nassar qualified and Uganda had two pediatric surgeons. And we felt, well, okay, this complete one-off, let's do one more. And really, that's where the story began at Kids Operating Room. We saw the kind of tremendous impact that those two operating rooms had in Uganda, where children who had not been able to access surgery, who were dying, waiting to access surgery. You know, that hope that I talked about earlier that we had as parents in the UK, suddenly there were parents in Uganda that also had the same hope that Nico and I had, where they understood that their child would be able to live a normal life or live a life whereby they're free from pain or disability or just survive something as simple as an appendicitis and survive that rather than watching a child die from septic shock 7 days later because they couldn't access surgery and their appendix ruptured. Just tragedies that we were able to see averted. And it was inspiring. And we were just hooked. We just kind of started to learn more about what are the issues? Why are so many countries don't have pediatric surgeons? Why are so many countries not prioritizing pediatric surgery in their global health plans? And we decided we were going to commit the rest of our lives to doing this. And what was a one-off became two, became three or four. And really at that point in 2017, I started to have serious conversations with Nicola about, you know, I actually want to do this for the rest of my life. I feel like we've come across something that we can actually have a tremendous global impact with. And yeah, we made the decision to sell our company. Now, that wasn't the end of my entrepreneurial life. Mm-hmm. I still have investments and other interests, but actually what I took was that entrepreneurial kind of startup life that I'd had as a running businesses. And I decided that if we were going to do this, we needed to almost take that mentality to Kids Operating Room. So Kids Operating Room started in 2018. And became a registered charity. People that joined us right at the very beginning, there's two or three key people like David Cunningham, who's still our CEO, was the CEO on day one. He's still the CEO. Surrounding myself with brilliant people was kind of part of the plan. And some of them came from the private sector, not just from the third sector. So yeah, really from day one, we started focusing completely around how do we scale this up? How can we do as much as possible? I've only got 30 good working years left in me. So I need to maximize it as much as I can and have as much impact as we can. And Nicola just, it was the right thing. We sold the company. We put half of that profits from the sale of the company, half of the sale of the company into starting Kids OR. And that really funded the first couple of years, the work we did, and allowed us, rather than focusing on fundraising, that allowed us to build an impressive team who we knew we would need if we were to grow as quickly as I wanted to.
That truly is amazing. And I kind of wanted to ask, it feels like a very natural progression from you kind of starting out doing, oh, it's just one off, and then realizing this is what you want to do. What was that moment when you realized, like, I'm actually going to sell my business and really move on from this?
Yeah, so it was actually just after the decisions. One of the eureka moments was just actually after Nicola, and almost it just proved that the right decision had been made. I knew that we wanted to sell the company because not because it was a distraction, but because I wanted, or that I needed the money to start Kids OR. I just wanted to focus my life on something different. I'd worked in hospitality for almost 20 years. You know, I'm kind of, at that point, I was kind of early 40s. It's just, I'd kind of slightly lost my love of the hospitality industry. Just from having done it a long time and no longer feeling that challenged. So the opportunity that happened in Uganda came along at just kind of the perfect time when maybe I was looking for other opportunities and challenges. I never realized getting involved with that first operating room would have such a profound impact on me personally, and just with my connection with Nicola and I, having experienced so much of what children and parents go through here in the UK, we just couldn't believe that, you know, there were countries in the world where, you know, child's ill. Just what Ezra had, our eldest, you know, born premature, both her lungs had collapsed. You know, Ezra would have died had she been born in another country, in a country, in a low middle country that doesn't have a pediatric surgical service, she would die. So for us, it was that was, we'd already made that decision. But then I went to India to the Global Initiative of Children's Surgery as a kind of young, not young, but an excited, this was start young in my journey of philanthropy. And I was like convinced, I was told this was like the biggest conference in the world for global children's surgery. So I went there thinking, I'm going to go meet all these people that are providing surgery for kids, that are desperately trying to, you know, solve this unmet need. And I landed in Vellore, and a few days I would go around people saying, so what are you doing? Like, what's your involvement in global surgery? And what are we doing to try and increase access to surgery for children? And it really felt like no one had the answer. Certainly no one else was doing it. And I was like, look, we built a couple operating rooms already and look at the impact they've had, almost like a slight pilot. You know, I kind of thought of it as a kind of pilot, the first few that we'd built. And I was like, surely this is not the case. But I came home from Vellore going, we are the only organization that exists in the world that, and this was only a month into officially registering Kids OR, that is doing this, which was quite exciting from a business point of view. I was like, we're first to market. No one else is doing this. And actually, our model was completely different from what was being done previously, because a lot of the time, when we looked at people that were trying to solve access to surgical issues in, say, Africa, it was all mission-based work. So everyone up until, it felt like, I'm not saying this is the case, but it felt like everyone up to this point, you know, that model of sending surgeons from the US, from the UK to Africa to operate on children, you know, we've all know of doctors and friends who have done that. But that was the wrong model. All it did was just increase dependency on foreign aid, because these doctors fly in. Okay, it's brilliant. You know, they save, they do 100 operations and then they leave and go home. But no one's strengthening the health system. No one's strengthening the workforce. They might do a bit of training and things like that. But without increasing capacity for surgery by investing in the local people, in the local workforce, and when I say people, I mean the surgical team, the nurses, the doctors, the surgeons, the biomedical engineers, the anesthetists. Without investing in those people locally, all we're doing is increasing dependency on foreign aid. So my model was, our model, Kids Operating Rooms model. And, you know, David Cunningham, myself, Nicola, those three key people at the start of Kids Operating Room, we all like 100% agreed this was the right way to move forward, was we were going to do things differently. We were going to go work with governments to establish the importance of investing in children's surgical services, work with them to identify a space within their health system, deliver state-of-the-art operating room. We're not talking about secondhand operating room equipment donated by the NHS or anything like that. This is state-of-the-art, what you would see in an NHS hospital in Scotland or anywhere in England, UK. More than 3,000 pieces of equipment in each operating room. We would go and deliver these in working hospitals to working surgical teams. And where there wasn't the capacity for teams, we would then go and train them. So train the surgeons, the anesthetists, the biomedical engineers that work in these operating rooms. And that is why our model has been so successful. And actually, you know, everyone is now looking at the way we do things and going, these guys have got it right. The mission is fine. Like, it works for some people, but for that long-term sustainable impact, we're the right way. And that is strengthening the health force, strengthening the health system. And when we leave, because that's always the plan, you know, when we hand an operating room to a country, the country is responsible for paying the salaries of the doctor, the hospital. Or, you know, the only thing we do beyond delivering the operating room is that we continue to maintain and service the equipment as part of a maintenance plan for 10 years. But other than that, the hospital is their hospital, it's their operating room, it's their surgical team that's working in it, it's their responsibility to pay for salaries, consumables within the operating room. And the only other big change since that model is we've started introducing solar into all our operating rooms. So now all our surgeries are powered by solar panels and battery systems. That means that when the lights go out, there's lots of issues across low, middle income countries with power. So when they go out, doctors are able to continue operating. Great for the environment, but it's also good for patient safety. You know, because we've been in hospitals where, you know, a nurse is holding a mobile phone light while the surgeon is finishing an operation because the lights.
Yeah, that truly is amazing. It's kind of like being a trailblazer within the space. As you said, that no one else is doing it. They were doing mission work, and kind of what you're doing is making sure everything will still work down the line and it's not relying on that aid.
And that was genuinely a eureka moment. I talk about it quite regularly, whereby I sat there on the flight coming home from India on my own, going, no one else is doing this. Like, either we've got it wrong or we're the first to market. And transpired, we were first to market, which is really exciting. From an entrepreneurial brain versus a philanthropic mindset, that was quite exciting.
Yeah, that is really, truly amazing. So you spoke about how your model is quite successful. How does KidsOR measure success?
It's such a brilliant question, because when we first set out in 2014, we built one operating room. And that was like, we knew that would save 1,000 children a year. And that was enough for me. Like, genuinely, that was enough for me. I was like, this is amazing. Let's just support John forever and we'll do 1,000 children a year. He'll operate 1,000 children a year and have a profound impact on them all. I should say they're not all life-saving. Some of them are life-enhancing rather than just life-saving. So is one child enough? You know, when you look at like the pain that a family goes through when a child dies or when a child has to live with a disability or in pain, like any parent, you know, the trauma you go through as parents when a child breaks their arm in the playground or playing outside in the garden, the thought, like if in this country, you know, the thought that a child's appendix would rupture in the UK and they would die 7 days later from septic shock in agony, I mean, that would never happen in this country. You can imagine the Daily Mail front page that was allowed to happen in a health system here in the UK. So when you just identify one child, because we're now providing capacity for 220,000 children every single year. So it's big numbers to kind of think about. When that's why I said it's a brilliant question, because, you know, what is the impact? I think when we started in 2018, we thought about, let's try and do 3 or 4 operating rooms a year. That was really ambitious. That was like, and then in 2019, I stood up at the World Health Assembly in Geneva, and I said we were going to build 100 operating rooms by the end of 2030. And everyone said, like, we had genuinely leaders in global health saying, like, you're mad. Like, you won't do it. You're setting yourself up to fail, and it's just not going to work. And in May this year, we were back at the World Health Assembly, announcing to the same people in the same room, or many of the same people, that we'd completed our 100th operating room. We opened it in Botswana earlier this year in April, and then 2 days later in Ethiopia, our 101st operating room. So I don't know how to measure success. Do you measure it per child? Do you measure it per the economic benefit of investing in surgery, which is now into billions of dollars in terms of the economic impact that we've had? Is it the 220,000 children a year that we now provide capacity to surgery for? Is it finishing something 4.5 years early? I mean, in terms of philanthropy, global health, just the world as we see it, how often do people get to stand up and say, actually, that commitment we made in 2019, we finished early, and we're actually getting another 100 by 2030. So I think the success for me is measured in, like, is my desire still there to keep doing it? And am I still as passionate today as I was 8 years ago when we started Kids Operating? And I would say 100%. For me, the success is having built up a brilliant team. I mean, let's face it, the team do most of the work. You know, founders often get a lot of credibility, a lot of the credit for the work publicly. And, you know, this amazing award that I got. But I feel that really, as chairman, my role is to make sure, as executive chairman, my role is to make sure we don't run out of money and to pick brilliant people. Mm-hmm. And we have a brilliant team Kids Operating Room who are working every single day. That we don't have a lot of high staff turnover. I think my team are really passionate, just as passionate as Nicola and I are about why we come into work every day, you know, why Kids OR exists to serve. And I think they're just with the young individuals who work really, really hard. So measuring success is, for me, do my teams feel the same way as I do about the charity? Are they as passionate about Nick, as Nicola and I are about, and David are about why we're here doing what we do? And I think that's the need. I think it is. I think that's a great measure of success for people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. So you also mentioned about the award. So you did win one of the big awards at the Hustle Awards this year, a Founder of the Year. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
So
I did feel a bit awkward about it because co-founded it with my wife, Nicola. So when I came home, I sheepishly told her, I said, you know, I've won a Founders Award. So she was delighted for
me. I'm sure she was. So what does the winning of the award mean for you, kind of both personally and professionally?
I think I don't actually seek the awards that, like, you know, we've got a brilliant team who, mm-hmm. you know, quite rightly have won several awards already for different things that we've done. The founder award is a great honor to get it. I love that, you know, I was put forward and I was selected. I honestly, genuinely had, if I'm being totally honest, I not for a second did I think I was going to win it. Mm-hmm. So to have won it was brilliant. As I said, I'm very careful publicly when I talk about just the balance of what I do and what the team do. So mm-hmm. It's very cheesy, but I kind of feel like I accept the award on the behalf of the whole team. But of course, like in every organization has a founder, like Nicola and I very much pushed the idea of Kids Operating Room, very much put the team together. We've built with a brilliant team, we've built this amazing organization together. So yeah, to be recognized is a beautiful thing, but yeah, I'm always a bit uncomfortable.
But that's quite humble, being like, yes, I am the founder, but it's the team, really.
No, but genuinely it is. I mean, I know that a lot of people say that, but like, I'm here talking to you. Like, genuinely, I woke up this morning and I'm big into running. So I had my running today this morning at 8:45. I got to take the kids to school. I get to like have breakfast with my family. Like, and then, you know, I'm now having this lovely conversation with you at 10:30 in the morning. But I know that from like 8:30 this morning, there have been people just all around the world, in the US, London, Africa, depending on timings. There's people already thinking about nothing other than Kids OR, and who are already head down, working away and making things happen. So genuinely, I do very much always live by that kind of, yes, I understand why publicly I'm put forward and I get the accolade, or there's a newspaper article, they quote me, but I never get fed up of telling people that actually there's a lot of really good, hardworking people while I'm doing this.
Yeah, that is truly amazing. So talking about the journey, you've been on it for a couple years now. What do you think have been some of the biggest challenges so far, and how have you managed to overcome them?
Probably, there've been lots of challenges, lots of little ones. But probably as we progress the journey of Kids Operating Room, we started in 2018 and we knew that we already had good ideas that there were several pediatric surgeons that we knew well that didn't have the space, the capacity for surgery that we knew that with a similar investment in their operating rooms, we would be able to have a profound impact, just like we'd had in Uganda. So in Tanzania, Rwanda, Zambia, Malawi, those kind of initial countries that we then expanded into. But we quite quickly came to a point whereby there were no more pediatric surgeons. Like none of them just kind of that we knew of. And we realized that one of the rate limiting factors to our growth was we couldn't just keep finding pediatric surgeons and giving them an operating room. We actually had to start training surgeons. Not that we exactly ran out, but we knew that if we wanted to grow as quickly as we could, there just wasn't the capacity within like the continent of Africa, for example, in many countries where they didn't have a single pediatric surgeon. We were going to need to train. If we wanted to build an operating room surgical service of excellence in Burundi, for example, Burundi has never had a pediatrist. So we were going to need to train them. So that was a massive kind of shift or pivot in our, you know, we thought there'd be a constant queue of surgeons that we could meet and want our, you know, we'd be able to build an operating room, there'd be a waiting surgical team there, but that wasn't the case. So as we expanded into countries like the DRC, Burundi, Sierra Leone, Burkina Faso, some really challenging countries to operate in, also, they'd never had a surgical service for children before. So we were starting right from the very beginning. And the right from the very beginning meant training brilliant people, local surgical teams, anesthetists, biomedical engineers, nurses that could support the surgical system.
Mm-hmm.
That was probably one of our biggest hurdles. But it's, I mean, it's absolutely the right thing to do. And now we've become one of the biggest trainers of surgeons, anesthetists, and biomedical engineers in the world.
Yeah, that truly is impressive. I guess on the flip side of that, what would you say have been some of the highlights since founding Kids LR?
I think I still love going to one of the, so we do a lot of installs, as you know, we've done now over 107. And when very occasionally, if the timing's right, and I go on quite a few installs, if the timing's right, then we can see an operation happening the next day that we've installed an operating room. It doesn't always work out like that. Maybe it's 3 or 4 days later, a week later before the surgery start. But on several occasions, I've managed to sit there and see a child having the first operation in an operating room that we just built. And that never, ever changes, that feeling of hope for the family. Because as I said to you before, Nicola and I have been through a really tough time having children. But we always had hope. And when you see that hope on any family's face, like mother, father, who are desperately despairing at a child who's sick, who's been told they can't have surgery or there's no facility for them to go to, when they suddenly know that actually here's a surgeon who's trained, who's going to operate on a child, and that child's life is going to change forever, even like the profound impact of surgery is not just okay, there's the immediate impact of surgery, but like if you take a little girl, for example, who has a fistula where, you know, she's doubly incontinent, right? She's not going to go to school, right? So she's not going to get an education. She's going to, you know, well, it's already sometimes quite a tough, you know, tough opportunities for a young girl in a country whereby, you know, she's not able to access surgery. But if that surgery doesn't happen, she may never go to school, not get an education. So the profound impact of not having access to surgery can be life-changing in the sense that that child's entire life will go in a completely different direction. So seeing that happen and watching a little child's life change and the parents, the smile on the parents, the joy and hope that they have, and then being able to go back and sometimes, rarely, on a rare occasion, getting to go back and actually seeing the child 6 months, a year later. That's the highlights. And as I said, I'm quite often there to be able to see the first operating room operation. Amazing. I kind of wish I could go back to 17 trained to be a surgeon. I was never clever enough, unfortunately. But it's such an incredible impact that these brilliant, talented surgeons and their teams have. The other highlights, we've never said no to challenging situations in the sense that there are countries that people don't want to go into that really are neglected. Built the world's first ever pediatric operating room in a refugee camp in northern Kenya in Kakuma. That was just incredible. We've got an operating room in the DRC and in Haiti where there's still ongoing problems in terms of civil war. And our operating rooms are still open and working and operating on children when others have closed, when other agencies have relied on mission work have closed their operating rooms, are still open because they're being used by local people. Again, proving our model works. During COVID, we shipped over 35 million pieces of PPE to Africa, all donated by the NHS, which was, you know, again, a huge highlight. And I think opening an operating room in Kabul last year. Again, another highlight to be able to go out to Afghanistan personally and see the soldiers that are working there in Ataturk Hospital in Kabul, when many, many other international agencies have pulled out of Kabul. To be able to be there and see, it's actually our busiest unit of all our 107 units. It's our busiest. And to see children who have been horribly impacted by war, decades of war, but, you know, to be able to, for them to be able to access surgery is just, again, just a one of thousands of highlights. You know, we first hit 10,000 children that we've operated on, then it was 100,000, then we hit 500,000, and just these are kind of big moments that we always celebrate internally and within the team. It's just great. Mm-hmm. 100 operating rooms last month, or 2 months ago with my wife there, and for us both to be in Ethiopia as we opened it. Again, brilliant. You know, just lots of lovely moments, not one in particular, but lots of lovely moments.
Yeah, that is truly amazing, kind of knowing the impact that you're making in all these different countries. So you said about how you have 107 operating rooms already installed. What do you think have been some of the biggest lessons learned from kind of scaling this initiative?
Yeah, I mean, fundraising is challenging. I mean, we rely now entirely on funding. Nicola and I still give £1 million a year, which covers most of the running costs of kids operating room annually. So what's really great is that when a donor gives money to us, they know that because the costs are covered by Nicola and I, that every penny goes to the end. The challenges. So I mean, the challenges,
kind of the lessons that you've learned in scaling.
So fundraising is always the topic. I don't think there's ever like a risk register in any charity right now that doesn't have fundraising at the top. So because we rely fully on fundraising, then the challenges have been scaling that up. Mm-hmm. A good fundraising team has been difficult and challenging. We've had some turn of all the areas of our organization. The highest turnover seems to be in fundraising. But we've now got a really good, stable team here in the UK and across in the US. So fundraising's a lesson that we've kind of learned. Luckily, my CEO, that's his background, and that's been a huge help. Some of the other challenges we've learned, it's just for me personally, is being patient that things are happening quick. I always want everything to happen now. And I get frustrated when they don't happen quick enough. So being patient, understanding that there's processes in order to be responsible when we're running a charity, to be safe, putting patient safety always first, putting the safety of all our staff and our teams when they're traveling is lessons learned. We work in some really, really difficult, challenging countries that require lots of security. So learning about cultures, learning about how we get staff in and out of countries safely has been lessons learned. But I think for me personally, lessons learned, I think you can't do everything yourself. And I now rely entirely on a brilliant team. And I think that's something that, you know, I'm getting better at doing. Mm-hmm. But it's like any scaling up any business is any charity business is, I'm sure everyone experiences the same problems.
Yeah. I think how you said you want everything done now, I think that really comes down to like that entrepreneurial mindset of, I want it now because I've thought it.
Absolutely. And you know, my character doesn't appreciate the amount of thinking between the idea and the delivery, you know, and it's just like, I just assume someone else will do it. And I guess that's one of my weaknesses is I need to actually sometimes take a bit of time to think about what is the process to get from an idea to a delivery. But that's what, you know, I think David Cunningham, my CEO, I think if we were to do kind of business personality tests, I think we would score completely differently. But that's brilliant, isn't it? Because I think we both complement each other really, really well. And where perhaps if there's any weaknesses on my part, he's there to kind of guide that. And likewise, if there's any areas that he feels maybe he's weak on, I think I guide that. So actually, and then Nicola's brilliant because she's the kind of heart of the charity in my mind. Like, whereas I'm always perhaps business. I think Nicola thinks with her heart and has a huge love for the work that we do in the children and the families, and is always reminding me that, you know, while sometimes it's not always about statistics and numbers and papers being written about what we do and publications being made about what we do, but actually it's about the children, it's about the families, the heart behind what everything we do is that mission to give, you know, as many children access to safe surgery as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think that the three of us is that kind of core founding team. I think we're brilliant together.
Yeah, that's amazing. So kind of in the same vein, what's one lesson or piece of advice that you wish you would have known before starting the charity?
I don't really know the answer to that. I think I've never been scared of failing. I've had failures in the past. Never been scared of failing. I've always felt like I'd learned a lot from that process. I wouldn't want to know the answers before they happen, because actually we were totally taking a step into new territory. I think we've done stuff with Kids OR that's never been done before. So for us, there was no one to tell us how to do it. There was no one, there wasn't a book you could read to say, like, how do you build 100 operating rooms across low, middle income countries around the world? So we were just like slightly kind of flying the plane as we were building it. And that in itself led to some, you know, making mistakes, that's fine. And some interesting challenges that we hadn't thought about. But certainly I don't think I would have wanted to know. Maybe if only how difficult it's going to be, we might not have done it. But no, so I don't really have it. It's not so much advice that someone could have given me. I just think that nothing happens without hard work, and nothing like this can be done without dedication of really, really good people, including me, Nicola, David, but also the entire team. So I think my advice to me, if I go back to start, just be like, keep your head up, just keep going, and it'll get better.
Perfect. And that leads me on to my final question of the podcast, which is, what does the future hold for yourself and Kids OR? Do you have any big plans that you can discuss?
Yeah, I've recently taken over my father's foundation, the Wood Foundation. He retired at 82 years old. So I'm away from Kids OR, I'm currently chairing a brand new charity. For me anyway, it's been a well-established charity, but a new charity for me. I'm taking some of the lessons learned from Kids OR into that relationship between the senior management team there and the board, and doing things a little differently than how they've been done before, but not reinventing the wheel there. I have, again, I'll come to Kids OR in a second, but you know, I've got a young family, so prioritizing them, my relationships with them. My eldest is 14 now, since 15, and I'm like, I cannot believe she's going to be leaving home in 3 years. So I'm kind of panicking at the thought of trying to like have those moments with her, because I remember when I was 18, I was just off. And okay, I did call my mom once a week, but it was a few years before I started re-engaging with the family again regularly. So I know that all children will go off and, you know, disappear for a few years, and I'll really miss her when she does that. So I've got a few years left with her. My youngest is only 9, so that's great. I've got time before she leaves home. And, you know, prioritizing time with Nicola is really important, because we're incredibly busy. Nicola's very busy running a big estate here in Scotland. So yeah, doing that. But Kids OR wise, any announcements? I mean, we made a big one just recently, which is we're going to build another 100 by 2030, which will have taken it to 200 operating rooms by 2030. That's over 500,000 children every year that will access surgery in one of our operating rooms. We've got other regions that I'm excited about. I think we've been very Africa focused. So moving forward, I think we've started to look more at India. We've built an operating room in Pakistan and Bangladesh, starting to look at Southeast Asia and Latin America, where we currently have 3 operating rooms in Peru, Ecuador, and Haiti, but we'd love to do more there. So I have to say, you know, it sounds impressive, 100 plus operating rooms and hundreds of thousands of surgery a year, but sadly, you know, we barely scratched the surface. 1.75 billion children right now cannot access surgery when they need it. So our work needs to be double, triple, quadruple. And unfortunately, in my lifetime, I'm not going to be able to achieve that. But, you know, I want to be able to set up the organization so that long after Nicola and I have gone, it still exists and it's recognized globally as the children's surgical charity. the surgical. So yeah, the big announcement was just made recently, which is we're going to do another 100 by 2030. And that's our kind of big news that we're all really focused on.
Yeah, amazing. It's going to have a huge impact. And like you said, you want this to be around for so long and just keep making more and more impact across the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Perfect. And to kind of round off the episode, is there anything else that you wanted to mention or plug?
So we have recently started a company called Global Hospital. And it is really taking a lot of the skills that we've learned from Kids Operating Room in terms of installing health infrastructure around the world and taking that to a much wider audience where we can deliver the same services, but for, let's say, an adult operating room. Or we were getting asked constantly, can you do this for us? Because we didn't want mission creep, we'd always say no. So we actually started a company called Global Hospital, and it will allow us to be able to do some of the things we already do very well with kids who are. But the beautiful thing about it is Global Hospital is owned by Kids Operating Room. So instead of the profits of Global Hospital going to, you know, directors or shareholders, it goes back into Kids Operating Room. And that's part of our plan to become less reliant on donors, to have a more sustainable revenue income that we can spend at Kids Operating Room. But it's hugely exciting because that now has a new CEO. He'll build his own team. And we're excited about some of the products we have to offer, including the solar surgery system and some of the disaster emergency relief solutions that we're coming up with through Global Hospital. It's quite exciting. And we've just started a partnership with NASA. So hugely exciting. We got approached by NASA to look at a piece of equipment they use on the International Space Station, which is essentially an oxygen concentrator. So again, some of the challenges we face in Africa are, as well as power supplies, hence the solar system, we also have issues with producing oxygen, and oxygen is needed for surgery. So NASA have a system that works whereby tiny little system, it's unbelievable, doesn't exist anywhere in the world, and they have partnered with us to trial this system in low middle income countries, whereby we could actually have a workable oxygen solution in countries that, you know, it's really challenging for us to get oxygen. Doing a trial with them for the next 5 years, which is massive. And they're only doing it with two companies. One is Kids Operating Room, and the other one is Blue Origin, Amazon. So I feel like we are just slowly beginning to punch for the big guys. But beautiful to be recognized by NASA and to have an opportunity to partner with them. And across, I'm very excited about our Dundee warehouse having NASA Research Center in big writing across the top of the building. So yeah, that's just happening. That's big announcement, right?
Yeah, that's amazing, kind of being recognized by the NASA.
Well, the trial works. We essentially could have this system in every operating room and every hospital. Like, the possibilities are huge, way beyond just pediatric surgery, but for every rural, every hospital in Africa, around the world where oxygen's a problem, this could be potentially a solution. And it's being trialed with us in Dundee in Scotland, which is very exciting.
Yeah, I guess the impact of that's huge, but also there's so much more visibility for you as well that will kind of be out there, because if a NASA's only working with two different organizations and you're one of them, everyone's going to be like, oh, what are they up to?
Yeah, no, it's really, and it's also little things like that. What's brilliant is a bit like when the solar system came in on board and we launched that at UNGA in New York, with the United Nations in New York, and it was brilliant. It's just like the excitement the team feel for it, you know, to be on a Zoom call. We had our entire team last year, this big staff. I'm speaking to someone from NASA in Houston. And just like, you know, when you start out building operating rooms, you don't think the entire team are going to be sitting in the office having lunch and chatting to NASA. So it was just awesome. It was really cool. Mm-hmm. These little moments are brilliant for motivation, for, you know, just refocusing everyone's attention on the mission that we're doing. Yeah, it's exciting stuff.
Yeah, that is so exciting. And I'm so excited to kind of keep up with Kids Operating Room and see what else you're going to do. And the fact that you're going to hopefully launch 200 operating rooms across the world.
Hopefully we will.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Gareth. It's been amazing talking to you and learning more about Kids Operating Room and the impact that you're having.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the amazing award.
Yes, well, you definitely deserve it.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
If you like this episode, be sure to subscribe to the podcast and check out Startup Magazine's socials to stay up to date on the latest startups news.